to do so at table, and counsel for the appellant may proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court, good afternoon. My name is Steve Gurr. I represent the appellant PFP Family Holdings. I would like to reserve 5 minutes, if I may, Your Honor. Thank you for the opportunity to address the key shareholder rights, shareholder disenfranchisement, and the applicable corporate statutes at issue in this case. On December 15th of 2008, the shareholders of Stanley Media, Inc. held their 2008 shareholder meeting. My client was required to go and receive an order requiring that meeting in order for it to be held. But at that meeting, a quorum existed. A quorum of more than one-third of Stanley Media shareholders attended, and they elected 3 new directors, and they also, importantly, acted unanimously to adjourn and reconvene at another time to be established by the presiding officer within 120 days. And what we seek here is a recognition of the quorum that existed and the election of the directors, which was proper. The court and the presiding officer were led to err as a matter of law by the late submission of a revocation of a proxy, which the court retroactively applied in violation of the statute, and frankly by the hyperbole of Mr. Lee and the imposition of unauthorized, unnecessary, and unlawful requirements upon 2 categories of shareholders. We have 3 major points of error, 4th being the failure to reconvene, but I'd like to focus on the first 3 errors of law subject to de novo review. And one is the retroactive application or recognition of Knight Equity Holdings proxy. There was a retroactive revocation. There was no finding that it was rejected. Rather, it was simply allowed to be revoked retroactively.
Counsel, wasn't the finding about whether it was accepted or rejected still pending? So this wasn't when the finding that first we find that the proxy is valid and now we're going to retroactively revoke. It's that while the question of validity is still pending, information of the revocation comes in.
And we have clear guidance from the General Assembly on when a proxy becomes effective. There's no reason for the court or the special master to guess or to apply any other time except it's a proxy is effective when received, and the specific corporate code is section 7107-2033. It says appointment of proxy is effective against the corporation when it's received.
But isn't that premised on the view that it's valid?
Well, she didn't reject it. She said it was revoked. Actually, the court found it was revoked. It's the retroactive revocation of the proxy. The court and the presiding officer both held that there was a valid signature and an authorized signature on both the proxy and the revocation. And if you look at the bases on which a presiding officer can reject a proxy, it is either a concern about the validity or a concern about the authority. Here she held on page 28 of her report, the presiding officer said she was satisfied as to both his authority and his signature. So she didn't reject it for the 2 allowed reasons. She went on to say, I'm going to give retroactive effect. And if you look at the statute that determines when you determine whether a proxy is present or a quorum is present, it's not when you look at it 3 weeks later. When a meeting is called to order, the representative is present. And it's 7107-2062. A shareholder is represented at a meeting for any purpose. That shareholder remains present for quorum purposes. And actually, in Ms. Crandall's book, the corporate code, she cites the official comment that talks about that phrase, represented at a meeting. When was Knight Equity represented at this meeting? And it says, represented at a meeting means physical presence of a shareholder, not the case here, whether in person or by the shareholder's written authorization, the proxy holder, Mr. Bellin, was there in the room after the meeting has been called to order. There's no dispute that Mr. Bellin, holding that proxy, was in the room after the meeting was called to order. If the revocation is valid, the proxy was valid. The only question is here, when did it become effective? And can you retroactively revoke a proxy? And that's not the law. It's not the law here or in Delaware.
Mr. Gura, I take it that your position would be that parties can't stipulate to the contrary either, meaning that as long as there is a specific provision dealing with proxies in the bylaws and specific provisions set forth statutorily, the parties in the court can't change that.
That's correct. It's up to the General Assembly, not only on this issue of the revocation of the proxy, but similarly on the rules that were applied to Mr. Gordon, you know, again, retroactively, frankly, and this requirement for some sort of holographic dating on the proxy form. There's no statutory requirement in this state that the proxy forms be dated. And frankly, to your point, the only thing my client, which is only one shareholder out of all of these disenfranchised shareholders, the only thing we agreed to was the implementation of the 2007 rules. In the 2007 shareholder meeting, which we weren't a part of, but our client submitted a proxy, the presiding officer, same presiding officer, accepted and did not reject undated proxies, and the court accepted the outcome of votes that included undated proxies.
So you might be stopped from denying the 2007 situation, but your position is that it doesn't make any difference what happened in 2007. It can't possibly, as a matter of law, alter the statutory and bylaw requirements for voting proxies to a quorum at this point.
Correct. And briefly as to Mr. Gordon, the same presiding officer, accepted his proxy for 2007. She adopted no rule that required Mr. Gordon to provide a notarized statement of his address. If you look through the reasons that she claims justify rejecting his proxy, it was he failed to submit a notarized statement of his address. And she's made this request for the first time in her report. She came out with a list on December 17th of what cures she was going to require. She wanted his original, she got his original. She wanted a statement of his address, she got his statement of the address. She had no legal authority to require anything else. But frankly, had she said, give me a notarized statement of your address, she would have got it.
Well, Mr. Gore, let me ask you this. Is she received an address that she was unable to verify, and she does have the authority to investigate the validity, so she is satisfied it is valid. So so would she have then been restrained from trying to verify, and if she could not verify, then how could she accept it as valid?
That's not quite what happened. Sure, she has some discretion. There's a reasonable is the phrase. But here there was, Mr. Gordon was in prison. He was in the Taft Correctional Facility in California. Of anybody, perhaps any shareholder, there was no question where he was. They didn't lose him. He signed the affidavit saying I was in Taft in December when I submitted my proxy. There was an affidavit submitted to the trial court. I was in jail at Taft. His, I don't know, was it probation officer or whoever it was, one of his minders, is the one who forwarded his proxy. You know, his affidavit was part of our objection to the presiding officer's report, and it sets forth where he was when he was transferred. There are locator websites that show where he was now. Very easy for her to do this verification, but Mr. Gordon didn't even require to go to the trouble. He submitted that affidavit. Now, there was some confusion because he was moved in the first week of January, and that's also in the evidence in his affidavit in the prison locator. And my understanding is that somehow she said, well, now you're not where you were when you executed the proxy, so that gives me some basis to throw out your proxy and your vote and disenfranchise all the rest of the attending shareholders. We disagree. That's an abuse of discretion. And more importantly, going back to the two reasons in the code that allow a presiding officer to reject a proxy. One is question about his signature. The other is about his authority. Same guy, same signature in 07, same signature in 08. She didn't apply the rules. If she was going to impose a new rule and say, we want you to be treated separately, That's fine. She also pointed to the fact that he didn't cast a vote. Mr. Lee's representative, Junko Kobayashi, didn't cast a vote. Five other shareholders didn't cast a vote. They submitted proxies, and she accepted them. So we've got sort of this arbitrary, you know, the claim that I can do whatever I want. That's not the case. She has to act within the statute, and she's not the General Assembly. More importantly, nor is the court. And I understand the 5 minutes, but...
Mr. Gurr?
Yes.
If you lose on either the Knight issue or the Gordon issue, you're out of a quorum, isn't that right?
I believe that's right. I think on the three of them together, get 34.7%.
Okay. You have 4 minutes, 46 seconds.
I'd like to reserve that. Thank you.
Please, the court. Good afternoon. I'm Mark Williams. I represent the appellee, Stan Lee, in this case. The court should affirm the decision of the district court in this case, which in turn affirmed and accepted the report of the special master here for several reasons. The special master determined that there was no quorum in this case and determined that as a matter of fact. The shareholder meeting here was conducted pursuant to an agreed order entered by the court. In that agreed order, a special master was appointed, and rules which were agreed upon by the parties were implemented in order to conduct a shareholder meeting. The shareholder meeting was conducted by a special master who is arguably the dean of corporate law in Colorado and probably the region. And this special master conducted that shareholder meeting in a painstakingly thorough and detailed manner from the word go. She analyzed all of the data that she received. She analyzed all of the proxies that she received in conformance with the law. But as a matter of fact, she determined that there was no quorum.
Is it your contention, Mr. Williams, that as a matter of law, parties to litigation can alter through agreement the bylaws or the statutory requirements for determining and assessing a quorum?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, I don't think that they necessarily changed the rules or the laws.
I didn't.
Sorry, right.
I'm just asking you.
The parties can agree to do that. And
how can they agree to do that when that's an alteration of the, let's take the bylaws example. How can they agree to alter the bylaws without the requirements being met to alter bylaws, namely, and I'll just give an example, two-thirds of the shareholders or two-thirds of the vote of the directors?
They didn't, well, and that's why I started off with the first point, Your Honor. What the agreements and the rules were to be able to have within the bylaws and within the statutory guidelines a manner in which to conduct the shareholder meeting. And so, for instance, as a matter of fact, when it came to the issue of the dating of the proxies, there is a dating procedure to make sure that there was an absence of fraud, to make sure that there was a valid proxy that was there. Counsel suggested by the statute there's no requirement to have a dating. Well, the statute itself says that a proxy cannot be more than 11 months old. In order to be no more than 11 months old, you have to have a date to determine when it was done. And so in order to determine and to ensure that there were no badges of fraud, what was agreed to was to have a dated proxy. And that's not unusual. And the case law that is cited by both parties demonstrates that in fact, proxies are dated to make sure that they're not stale. The rules were put in place to ensure an orderly shareholder meeting. The rules were in conformance with the bylaws and with the laws of Colorado. The rules were vetted in the extreme. The parties abided by the rules. In fact, the rules that were put in place were used by the appellant in order to demonstrate that their votes were valid. For instance, with the Peter F. Paul Trust, she required certain data to determine that there was, in fact, authority by the persons providing the proxies had authority to do so. And they abided by those rules. In fact, almost all of the shareholders whose votes she did accept, I guess all of them, because she did accept them, complied with those rules to ensure that they were proper parties to be able to provide the proxies.
Mr. Williams?
Go ahead.
All right. Well, let me just ask you this. As far as the notarization requirement, was that a rule that was employed in 2007, and was it actually a requirement that the special master employed in 2008 on the Gordon proxy?
There was a notarization aspect of it in the 2007, I believe, Your Honor. But the purpose of that was to ensure that the person who was signing it was, in fact, that person. You remember, what you have here is the two biggest people involved here are Peter F. Paul and Steve Gordon, both of whom were known felons and were also charged, tried, or actually pled guilty to, Mr. Gordon may have tried, and were put in jail because of the manipulation of the stock of this company. So there were known felons, and what Ms. Krendel wanted to do was to make sure that whoever was providing these votes, to ensure that there were no badges of fraud, to ensure that she absolved herself of any reasonable cause to believe that that person wasn't a signatory, to have that requirement. And the requirement was not unreasonable at all, because what she wanted to do was to satisfy herself that she had no reasonable cause to doubt the signature. That is a question of fact that she had to determine. And throughout this whole process, Ms. Krendel went to great pains to determine whether people could and had in fact had authority, or they to determine who they were, who they said they were. For instance, she and folks in her office made calls to various shareholders when they received proxies to determine whether that in fact they were, to satisfy herself that in fact as a presiding officer that person had authority. So she went to great pains to try to franchise the shareholders rather than to disenfranchise them. And when she had reasonable doubt as to believe or a reasonable basis to believe that the signatory was not who that person said they were, then she discounted that vote. With respect to the and that is why it was important to have these rules so that everybody can apply it. There are no rules themselves on how to conduct a shareholder meeting. There's not a rule by rule basis within. There are some guidelines in the bylaws. There's guidelines in the statutes. But what she had was certain rules that were applied to all persons in order to ensure that it was done fairly and democratically. That's the importance of rules. With respect to the night equities, the important thing with respect to that is both the in particular the bylaws. In order to get a quorum, it essentially says, and if I may quote it, one-third of the votes entitled to be cast on a matter by a voting group shall constitute a quorum. That says votes entitled to be cast. Night equities at the time of the meeting was not entitled, or Mr. Belland as the proxy holder, was not entitled to cast a vote because that proxy was not valid at the time. So there was no entitlement to vote at that meeting because the proxy was not validated at that point. There was no quorum at the time of the meeting. In fact, the meeting minutes themselves state that the meeting was to be adjourned so that the special master could tabulate the votes and determine which proxies would be accepted or not accepted. So there was no quorum at that time, and the night equities proxy was ultimately determined and objected to because it wasn't valid. Therefore, at the time of the meeting, there was not a valid vote or proxy on behalf of night equities.
Because no vote was demonstrated on the proxy itself, is that the point?
No, because there wasn't demonstrated on night equities. I think that's the Gordon one, Your Honor.
Okay.
The night equities was not accepted because there wasn't sufficient authority documents to demonstrate that the person who had given the proxy was in fact authorized to provide it. And that's something that my opponent, his side knew about. With respect to the night equities, therefore, there was not a proxy that was valid or could vote at the time of the meeting. And so for quorum purposes, it didn't even apply, and the special master had not yet determined that there was a quorum. In the interim, before she made her determination of a quorum or not, the night equities revoked its proxy, which it can do both under the bylaws and the law, and therefore that proxy was not applicable to the to the quorum, and there was no quorum. With respect to Mr. Gordon, as I've already indicated, I don't want to repeat myself here, but there was a reasonable basis to doubt the validity of his signature. He is a known felon, one who manipulated the stock of this company, whose name was not on the shareholder list to which he, the special master sent notices of the meeting, who made mistakes in providing the document. And based upon that, which is a factual determination that she made, she determined that that proxy should not be counted. And that finding should be affirmed, was affirmed by the court and should be accepted by this court as well.
Mr. Williams, let me go back to the night proxy. The special master did receive curing documents for that proxy. And so would the curing documents have a retroactive effect to validate the proxy in the first place?
And I appreciate that question, Your Honor. The meeting was adjourned at that point, and a quorum had not been determined. There's either a quorum at the meeting or there's not. There wasn't a quorum at that meeting because there were not sufficient votes at that meeting entitled to vote to constitute a quorum. She adjourned the meeting, which was agreed to by Mr. Gurr's client, in order to determine whether there was a quorum. And then when she determined, if she were to determine that there was a quorum, she did not, then the meeting could go forward and there would be a quorum and the business could transact. But there was no quorum that was determined at that point. And therefore, there's no retroactive effect. And in any event, the key fact is that it was revoked prior to a quorum being determined, which is consistent with both the bylaws and the law. With respect to the undated ones, I've already discussed it to some degree, so I don't want to repeat myself here, but it's a factual matter that she determined. Either it's dated or it's not. And for the most part, people dated their proxies. At the very bottom of the proxy form, it says only the last dated proxy will be accepted. And immediately above that, less than a centimeter, is the place where you put the date. And all of the ones that she accepted had a date on it. And in order to make sure, particularly in a matter that is hotly contested, as she said in her report, it's important that you play by the rules. And the rules were followed by the appellant, by all of the people that he put together and his group to be able to vote, and therefore their votes were counted. So why should it apply to them? Why should it apply to my client? Why should it apply to almost all of the shareholders who chose to participate, but not a select few? That disenfranchises the rest who did comply with them. And
Counselor, can I just ask you a quick factual question? Who signed this agreement to establish these rules? How did this agreement come about?
Well, the agreement, the trial court said is, you are in its order, you are to follow the rules that were took place in the 2007 meeting. In addition, gave some framework for the rules in his order. And as part of the process of conducting the meeting, counsel back and forth, all of whom are in this courtroom right now, were working with Ms. Grendel on determining from a mechanical standpoint, how are we going to conduct this? There are emails which are in the record going back and forth about how to do it. So is there a signed two-page agreement that says these are going to be the rules? The answer is no. But there are rules that were set forth in the 2007 meeting. In addition, there were rules agreed to by the parties as they proceeded. They agreed on the form of the proxy. They agreed on the form of the notice of the meeting. They agreed on all other matters before it went out. And that was a painstaking thing that she performed.
So by the procedure here and the conduct of the parties, we have basically a de facto agreement between the parties that are here in court. The other shareholders didn't necessarily participate in this and, you know, might not necessarily be bound by this agreement, but your view is that the parties at least are.
Well, certainly the parties are, but here's what happened, Your Honor. All of the notice of the meeting was sent out. And so the rules and the mechanical nature of the rules were disclosed to all the shareholders who received notice. They knew what they had to do. Mm-hmm. In addition, proxy forms very clearly stated what had to be done. And And that fact is true is demonstrated by the fact, and that's important, that word fact, because that's what she determined, that almost all of the shareholders complied with that.
But let's say I'm a shareholder who failed to date my proxy. Wouldn't I be able to come in and say, strictly speaking, I never agreed to date my proxy. This is not a requirement of the law, and so you can't throw out my proxy on that ground.
Well, the rule or the proxy form itself stated that only the last dated proxy will be accepted. That shareholder signed that, and if you will, agreed to that as they signed it. I mean, that's what I would say in response to that, Your Honor. But from a legal standpoint, the one statute that applies is one that says that thou shalt not have a proxy that's more than 11 months old. In order to be able to do that, you have to have a date on it. Otherwise, it's a stale proxy.
That's the only way that you can establish that fact is by dating the proxy itself?
Yes. Yes. And I understand that there is case law that my opponent cites on that issue, but for the reasons we've articulated in our brief, we think that's an apposite. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Mr. Gurr, you have 4 minutes and 45 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let's get right to this dating issue. You have in the record the proxy. It says, please date it. There's no blanket requirement in the rules or on the proxy or anything the shareholders got that said, if you don't date this proxy by hand, we're not going to count it. It's going to be rejected. Because the rules had to comply with the statute, it doesn't say that. And because in 2007, this presiding officer accepted undated proxies. This argument about us agreeing to anything that's not in the statute is nonsense. When we found for the first time that the presiding officer was contemplating rejecting proxies that didn't have a holographic handwritten date next to the signature, we objected. We objected to the district court. Object here. It's not the law. It's not allowed. In fact, twice on this proxy form, and you have it, I know I'm not supposed to submit evidence, it says December 15th on it twice. This was prepared for this special annual meeting, not a special meeting. It was ordered by the court in November. This form was approved in November. It says it was prepared for this December 15 meeting. What does the statute say? The statute has two separate sections within the proxy statute that talks about it shall constitute valid means of proxy appointment by signing an appointment form. All that's required is a signature. An appointment is valid for 11 months unless a different period is set forth herein. So there's no requirement in the statute. In fact, all you have to do is sign it, and it is presumptively valid for 11 months unless it says otherwise. Here, the only evidence before the district court was every proxy submitted said December 15th on it twice. There was no rule announced by this district court or the presiding officer that they would blanketly reject these. Can you imagine if that was the rule? If corporate presiding officers could inflict this holographic signing or dating requirement on the shareholders, they wanted to play games, they'd say, oh, you didn't write in your name. Even though it says it's obviously for this meeting, and that's exactly what the Fourth Circuit case that we cite. In that case, South Carolina had a rule, a law, that said they have to be dated. It said we declined to hold that applicable to the proxy under circumstances where it could not have been executed earlier than 2 months before it exercised. The undisputed facts are here. It could not have been executed. None of these could have been executed until probably 3 or 4 weeks before, 3 weeks before this hearing.
So these were all new
and not stale.
So let me just clarify. For the rules that were in place for the 2007 meeting,
yes.
Was there any discussion between the parties about a requirement for dating?
I don't know. My client and I was not a part of the 2007. What I do know and what we submitted in our objection to the district court was the evidence that she accepted undated proxies in 2007. And even if the court and the presiding officer imposed that rule, it's not okay. The General Assembly must make that decision. If the General Assembly wants that level of game playing to be allowed, they have to make that decision.
Well, Okay, well, let me just follow up on that. So it's your position that what is in the legislature is the most that can be required for valid proxies, and that rules cannot establish more stringent requirements?
No, I think obviously that any presiding officer has the ability and needs to establish rules for Robert's Rules of Order will apply. You've got to get your proxies in by a certain period of time. This is how the meeting is going to proceed. But when you go to rejecting proxies, which is different than running the meeting, there are only two bases set forth in the statute, and that is not the right signature, not authorized. Here, neither the district court nor the presiding officer found that any of the undated proxies weren't signed by who they said they were, nor did either find that the night was not signed. There was a couple things that are important. Notary for Mr. Gordon was not required in 2007. Mr. Lee and his counsel tried this time in 08 to require notaries on the proxies. That was rejected. The quorum is based on the number of total outstanding shares entitled to vote, one-third. Not a third of the people at the meeting with a proxy, that's circular. The number doesn't change. It's based on the total shares. Here, it's a little ironic that
Finish your thought, please.
You know, we hear a lot about criminal. Nothing about my client. And the only court that's addressed anyone's misconduct is Judge Wilson, the U.S. District Court judge in California, and he found it was Mr. Lee who looted this company. And what we're trying to do is have these shareholders pursue their rights. All of the shareholders will benefit by allowing this board of directors to be acknowledged. We're just requesting the quorum be recognized and the directors allowed to go forward. Thank you.
I just have one question. It's not necessarily part of the argument, but I'm curious, and it may be clear to everybody. It's obviously a big deal here that this 2008 meeting be reconvened at some point.
Yes.
But it's not clear to me why. Why is it that we couldn't just start again in 2009?
Oh, it's a tremendous expense, first of all. And second of all, at a reconvened meeting, it was adjourned, not concluded. At a reconvened meeting, these disenfranchised shareholders whose proxies were not recognized can attend in person or by phone. The meeting is not concluded. They still have the right to attend.
Okay,
simply because their proxy won't be recognized, they can show up.
So there is a real practical consequence to
monetarily and quorum establishment wise, if we can get this reconvened, which is the alternative to what we want. But
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Thank you, Mr. Guru.
Thank you
again, Mr. Williams. Thank you both for your excellent arguments.